Erebor, the Lonely Mountain, is central to the story of The Hobbit, but has a rich and storied history outside of that too. Let's take a look. Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. On this channel, we cover Tolkien's legendarium in depth. Welcome. The Lonely Mountain of Erebor stands high over the plains of northern Rhovanion, observable from many leagues in all directions, star-shaped with six ridges running down and away from the peak, snow-capped even in spring, and also the source of the River Running, which flows for 600 miles through the outskirts of Mirkwood and east into the Sea of Rhûn. We don't know how long people have lived in its surroundings, but Tolkien tells us in the History of Middle-earth that the mountain itself had been in the control of the Longbeards, that's Durin's folk, since at least the early Second Age, keeping some kind of small colony there. Durin's folk's capital and main base at the time was Khazad-dûm, but they had a number of small colonies elsewhere, probably to help with diversification of mineral and metal mining operations. You can dig as deep as you want, but not everywhere has everything you might need. Khazad-dûm had its Mithril, the Iron Hills had iron, obviously, Erebor had gold and a few other precious minerals. But in the year 1980 of the Third Age, the vast underground kingdom of Khazad-dûm fell. The Balrog forced Durin's folk from its halls, and King Thrain the First led them, or most of them, eventually to Erebor, where he founded in 1999 the Kingdom Under the Mountain, basically expanding and making beautiful the small mine and colony that was already there. This was Erebor's first golden age. Great riches were mined under the mountain, and such was its prosperity that humans and others started to migrate there to trade and share the wealth. The great city of Dale was built, nestled between two of the spurs of the mountain in a bend in the River Running, and relations were good between men and dwarves. This only lasted a couple of hundred years, however, because in the year 2210, Thorin the First, that's not the Thorin we know, he'll be along in a bit, decided to move his people again, this time to the Grey Mountains, to the northwest of Erebor. It's easy to understand why. The Grey Mountains are bigger, with more potential for rich metals and mineral deposits, and there were also some Longbeards already there. Some had gone there rather than Erebor after the whole Balrog incident. Thorin probably wanted to just unite his clan, but disaster struck again, this time in the shape of dragons. The War of the Dwarves and Dragons led to Durin's folk once more being forced from their home. Many went to the Iron Hills, but a sizable contingent returned to Erebor, and the previous prosperity was re-established. Mines were dug deeper, halls and chambers made more impressive, trading relations with the men of the region were even more profitable. But then, in the year 2770, a third calamity. Smaug. Dragons love gold and precious gems, and the fame of the Lonely Mountain had travelled far. Smaug descended, and the dwarves were powerless to stop him. Many died. The city of Dale was destroyed. Some humans tried staying there for a while, but Smaug kept emerging and eating them, so Dale was soon abandoned. The beleaguered Longbeards were again without a home. Most of the survivors headed up to the Iron Hills to join their compatriots, but King Thror and his household clearly saw that as one retreat too many. They wandered and thought often of how to return before setting up a temporary base in the Blue Mountains far to the west. As for the Lonely Mountain itself, during those next couple of hundred years, it lived up to its name. The dwarves had gone, the men of Dale gone, and Smaug slept alone on his mound of treasure, content as a dragon can be, emerging only occasionally to find something to eat. The area surrounding Erebor gained a new name, the Desolation of Smaug. As we read in The Hobbit, there was neither bush nor tree, and only broken and blackened stumps to speak of ones long vanished. Then, as the third millennium of the Third Age was drawing to a close, a chance meeting between King Thorin II, grandson of Thror, who Smaug had evicted from Erebor, and Gandalf the Wizard led to a daring plan to retake Erebor. Gandalf provided a map showing a secret back door into the mountain and introduced them to Bilbo Baggins, a hobbit and newly titled burglar. It's fair to say that Gandalf and Thorin's detailed planning only got as far as how to get into the mountain, and not how to defeat the massive dragon inside, and Gandalf had other pressing business to attend to, so wasn't there for the attempt, but miraculously it all worked out. Bilbo did manage to sneak in, but also roused Smaug from his slumbers. When Smaug then emerges from his lair and starts attacking Lake Town, he is shot and killed by Bard, which leaves Thorin's small company in control once more of the mountain, though Bard thinks that he and his people deserve a share of the gold there. Thranduil and the elves of Mirkwood and the goblins and wargs also rather greedily want to claim some by force. Thorin asks for help from his cousin Dain and the dwarves of the Iron Hills, and before you know it, we're in the middle of the Battle of the Five Armies. The upshot of that, and a little bit of sneaky diplomacy by Bilbo, is that the dwarves retained control of the mountain, although Thorin and his closest relatives died, so Dain Ironfoot became king of Durin's folk and repopulated Erebor. The dwarves also managed to keep hold of the majority of their gold, so the restoration work after so long with just a single dragon occupant could go ahead without too much of a problem. At which point we should probably mention the Arkenstone, a magnificent jewel discovered deep under the Lonely Mountain during the reign of Thrain the First. The dwarves laboured to craft it into a multifaceted jewel that shone with its own light. It became known as the Heart of the Mountain, an heirloom for the kings of Durin's folk. When Erebor fell to Smaug, it was lost, and so was the one treasure above all that Thorin Oakenshield desired when he led the expedition to reclaim the mountain. He died in the Battle of the Five Armies, and it was buried with him, returned to the heart of the mountain. The restoration of Erebor was much more than just repairing a few walls and putting all the treasure back in its place, though. In Rivendell, Gloin, years later, tells Frodo that new chambers and roads had been carved deep underground, and towers atop the mountain. And just outside, the city of Dale was repopulated and rebuilt as the heart of a new kingdom under King Bard. Relations with Erebor were as strong as they ever were. Which is good, because the two kingdoms of dwarves and men came under attack not too long after, during the War of the Ring. While the story and battles we know raged to the south in Rohan and Gondor, Sauron also dispatched an army of Easterlings to invade the Kingdom of Dale, pushing the then King Brand and his defenders back as far as the gates of Erebor, where the dwarves of Erebor stood firm with their allies. Still, Kings Brand and Dain, yes, the same Dain who had come to Thorin's aid in The Hobbit, were killed, and man and dwarf alike were forced to retreat into the mountain. They held out there for several days before word emerged of Sauron's defeat. The Easterlings' resolve faded. The dwarves and humans burst forth from Erebor, and the siege was broken. Like with most of Middle-earth, our knowledge of Erebor in the Fourth Age fades over time. We know it prospered and relations remained strong with the people of Dale, and we know that sometime after the year 171 of the Fourth Age, King Durin the Seventh led a sizable contingent of Longbeards from Erebor to reclaim Khazad-dûm, as Balin had done a couple of centuries earlier. But this time, it was successful. That probably meant that Erebor returned once more to its former role of not the capital, but just a much-loved outpost for Durin's folk. And this is perhaps what makes Erebor so special for the dwarves. Yes, it had rich gold seams and served as capital more than once, but it also represents hope and a turning point for a people made homeless and forced from home after home by terrible evil. The Balrog forced them from Khazad-dûm, the dragons from the Grey Mountains, the orcs twice prevented their return to Khazad-dûm, and Smaug took Erebor. But the dwarves took Erebor back, through the quest of Erebor against everyone's expectations, and they held it from then on. They were then no longer homeless, and they were no longer without hope. If a great evil like Smaug could be defeated, then so could others. The Lonely Mountain was where they could once more become a community and a people united with a common vision of a return to home, to where they belonged. If you'd like to see more videos like this about Tolkien's Legendarium, there's a playlist appearing now on the left of your screen. Or to support this channel, thank you. There's a link to my Patreon page on the right of your screen. That's all for this time. Thanks for watching. I'll see you again soon.